From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football, heading into week four. And David can see me.
I can monitor, see you.
So I tried to make some faces while he was doing his intro. He always tries to knock me off my game when he does his intro in some different way, and I have to mimic it.
Yeah, but I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to look over here when I'm supposed to be talking to the listener over here.
You obviously look over there a lot.
I don't.
You kind of do.
No.
Check it out. But yeah, man, we're the Podcast of Champions, and we got to preview week four games. A lot more conference games, still some out-of-conference ones. We've got a couple teams on bye weeks. Yeah, I'm excited to get this stuff going. We're live on YouTube. Follow us there. Check us out. Subscribe. Hit that little bell so you know when we go live. We're doing it twice a week. Right now, we got a bunch of comments in the chat already. We will, if you have a question in there, I'll start and come back to it later. You can also email us questions, big10cast@gmail.com, or call or text us at 424-532-0678. Tweet us at Big 10 Podcast, B1G Podcast. And hey, if you have the Apple Podcasting app or Spotify, you can leave us a 5-star rating. We love that. We beg for them all the time. And on Apple, you can leave us a review. So your 5-star rating with any kind of review that maybe makes fun of us, whatever you want to do, as long as it's 5 stars, you are guaranteed to get it read on our show. I don't know if we have any new ones, David.
We do. We have 3 new ones.
Wow. Okay.
All right. I will start with the longest ago. This is from 4 days ago. This is Billy Bob in NorCal. Oh. Keeping on. As before, 5-star performance for a 1-star conference. Keep on talking up the meager 10, or is it 18? Go Cougs, fight on, in that order. All right. Thank you so much.
Ah.
This is from Alex 8764368. Preparation optional. The complete and utter lack of preparation inherent in this podcast suddenly seems less egregious after my Bruins came out of the tunnel with less idea what to expect from their opposition than Ryan trying to pick an out-of-conference Northwestern game after a long weekend in Vegas. With 134 FBS and 129 FCS teams, there had to have been at minimum 789 more qualified candidates that Jarmond could have put on his hot board and thrown darts at until he lands on at least one willing to accept the job. Instead, he pushed all his chips in on, quote, continuity, an instance of poor judgment only surpassed by my own regrettable choice prior to this game in opting for the 6-pack as opposed to any of the fine 30s on offer. On a more positive note, our season-long position at number 18 on the power rankings will allow me to check out early and search for more edifying Big Ten content elsewhere in the podcasting sphere, preferably one that has already forgotten that my Bruins have been consigned to this hellhole of a conference. Keep it mediocre, and may the blessed respite of basketball season be upon us shortly. I don't think he's happy with the Bruins.
It seemed a little on the fence. Yeah. Like, there was one of those, like, either way, I think the hire might work out, but I'm not sure. The process, though, I loved. Maybe he could have done this a little different. So, yeah. Come with a real take, though. Just, you know, have a real take.
Yeah, I mean, just, like, take a position, right? This is from Lil Tekka up next. New drops. I hate to say it because it was a nice thing to do, but the new guy just doesn't really have the voice for it. Go back to that guy and his wife, in my opinion.
It's tough to beat a guy and his wife. Shane and his wife.
That's 2 versus 1.
There's 2 people there, but we I have a whole board of it, so we can go back and forth. We have
the
options.
New drops may have been too professional for our show.
I love all the sounds; like, there were really great sounds and stuff. They were cool, and we do have a Big Ten roundup, which we didn't really have before. So I like that too. We appreciate everyone doing that. You know who I do appreciate, David?
Who?
We're going to talk. We got to talk some. My bookie for sure, but Thomas wrote us and was like, hey, I'd love to send you $100. He says, I would love to send you $100 Venmo to buy you and David lunch. Love the POC. Let me know a cell number to Venmo and fight on. Thomas from Malibu.
What a mensch.
He literally Venmoed me $100 and Dave and I will go to lunch. I can either Venmo you half of it, David, and we could do something.
No. It was required that we go together. I think that's inherent in the request.
West Texas Mike says, it's tough to beat a guy and his wife. Ryan Abraham. I guess he was quoting me.
Yeah. And then he says, how long have you been attacking couples in parking lots, Ryan?
No, that's true. Like, it's way easier.
It's way easier to just beat one person.
Yeah. If I want to carjack them, I don't want to do a couple. I want it just to be one.
So true.
That's good. But I did mention my bookie. So we're going to do our picks. Dave and I are both up against the against the spread bets. I think I am 23-14 right now overall against the spread. David's 21-16, so we both be making you money. If you want to get in, get a little juice on the game. It's a lot of fun. Every network is talking about it. It's just a part of athletics now, part of college sports. What are the lines of the games? We do our picks. We've been doing it for years and years, doing our picks against the spread, up and down, each and every conference game, and we'll keep doing it for you throughout the season. If you want to follow along with us and get a little action on it, you can go over to MyBookie, and they will help you out. And if it's your first-time depositor, you can jump in there, and they will give you a 100% deposit matching bonus if you use the promo code POC. You can use our old promo code PAC12, too, because we missed that one. But it's okay. POC for the Podcast of Champions, 100% initial bonus for your first deposit. Go check it out. And it's fun. You can do just the games straight up like we're doing. If you like overs or unders, you can do that. In the middle of games, you can do halves and live betting and stuff as well. A lot of stuff over there over at MyBookie. So go check it out. They've been working with us for several years. We've had a lot of fun with them. I like the interaction on the website and how they do it. So go check it out. Make sure you use promo code POC when you do your initial deposit.
Great read.
Thanks. I think I'm pretty good at this, but
tremendous.
I do my best. You used to do some.
Mm-hmm.
Which reads were you? We've done some other ones in the past, I think.
Yeah, we used to get copy from a couple of different entities and we would have to read them. But right. That was before, I want to say that was before we integrated over to Megaphone.
Oh, maybe it was. Yeah. But we are accepting sponsors if you want
to. Always accepting sponsors. If you would like to appear on our excellent show, don't tell them. Don't tell them. please. We would love to sponsor and talk about you and your whatever offering you have.
Do you guys get sponsors on the broadcast and stuff?
No, I don't solicit them for that. I want to say we did something a while back, but no, it's not. It takes work.
It does. It's not easy. No, and I'm not good at that either. Like I mean, we have Trader Joe's, which is a big one, but it was like, I mean, I kind of lucked into that. And, you know, the guys, John's amazing, does a great job at Trader Joe's, but he's a longtime listener. He listens to our show all the time too. So,
right.
So it's kind of funny. It was just like, yeah, so it's been a great partnership. I've loved it, but I'm not really good at going out there and like finding sponsors. Like it kind of has to find me. We used to get some before it was Megaphone, the company I was with, I forget what it was, but they would set up like deals. So we would get ad reads and stuff. So like the bed in my guest bedroom is like a Lisa bed that like I got for doing a bunch of reads. It was like an $800 bed they sent me. It was like kind of crazy.
I got a bunch of we used to do ads because we had Blue Chew, remember?
Oh my God, yes. That wasn't very long though, I don't think, was it?
It wasn't very long, but those reads also weren't very hard. I had like a pack of Blue Chew in my bathroom for the longest time. And it was,
from them.
And that was back when I was, 30. I definitely didn't need Blue Chew.
You're like, where is it now?
Where is it? I need it.
The Angry Trojan says, fight on from Columbus, Ohio. And he said, sorry, I couldn't sponsor a Bruin. All right. Well, you can sponsor the Parasol podcast if you want, if you got a company.
You can sponsor the Podcast of Champions.
David going, talking about sponsors is the same pained noise Tracy made on the broadcast.
So true.
Did he make, what was his noise?
It was like a,
But what was it about the game?
Or? It was about something. I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we got to preview all the games. We'll get to some questions. Our show was almost 2 hours last week. hopefully, I mean, earlier this week.
And well, stuff. And we're starting off with a banging start where we haven't talked a single game of football and instead have spent 10 minutes talking about the very function of advertising.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. We love that stuff. Okay, well, let's get into...
Oh, hang on. We got an important request.
Oh, on the chat? Oh, crap. We got a... Nice. Let me put that up there on screen. You want to read this one?
Today is my birthday. This is from Ernesto. Here's $10 for David to sing happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Ernesto. Happy birthday to you. I do have a question. How can we get the Big Ten championship at the Rose Bowl? It would be pretty amazing to host it out here. I think it's got to happen at some point.
Yeah, so they just re-signed. We learned during media days that they re-signed to do it in Indy for, I think, the next 3 or 4 years. But, yeah, I think they can do media day in Vegas, and I think they'll eventually do, like, the Big Ten championship. Maybe Vegas. I don't know if it would be the Rose Bowl, but that'd be great to do the Rose Bowl. Would the Rose Bowl allow that? Like, they hate new games, right?
They hate new things. I think if we get too far afield from Big Ten, Pac-12, and all that kind of stuff, I think it would be a nice, like, kind of, I don't know, a way to add some importance to the stadium again with something cool happening there. But I don't know if it's got all the bells and whistles people want from a title game stadium these days.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Torian says, fight on from Dayton, Ohio. We got a lot of fight ons from different parts of the country. There's a lot of fight ons in Big Ten country, I guess, because we're doing this conference. He's at work watching staffing for companies. All right. Well, hopefully those companies, they can take a little delay on getting staffed, you know. But thanks for the super chat, Ernesto. That's awesome, and happy birthday to you. All right. So he says, thank you. So that was very nice. Yeah. So we're in the chat. It's active. I'll try to talk and host and control the cameras, and then also put these comments up on the screen as David sits there and wears his Carhartt shirt.
I thought about going with the Marilyn Monroe happy birthday.
Oh.
I'd go for very seductive.
Yes.
But I didn't think anyone needed that.
Probably not. No. It is like 9:30 in the morning, too. Well, why don't we do our...
Big Ten Roundup.
It's a really roundup. It's kind of a roundup.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a roundup, it's a preview. Do we usually do the roundup for like recapping?
I think we do it for both, actually.
Do we?
Yeah.
All right. It is a little long, but I do like all the sound.
I like how every season we have to remember how we do this show.
Yeah, like what do we do? It's like, wait, so are we going in
reverse power order on the power order? Rankings?
What are we? No.
Times the games happened? What?
Previews, timestamps, recaps, reverse order.
If you haven't been a longtime listener, it only took us, I'm going to say, 5 seasons before we really got that down.
That's true. Mark has a interesting comment. Dave singing like Marilyn Monroe is the anti-Blue Chew.
That's right, baby.
Yeah,
if that's the cure to the Cialis commercial, you know, where it says if your erection lasts longer than 4 hours, call a doctor.
Or
the doctor's just going to say, all right, listen to this. And then it's just me singing happy birth, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very whispery. Very throaty.
Throaty. Okay. Well, let's preview some games, Mr. Throaty. So we have conference games.
Mr. Throaty.
A lot more conference games this week. And we're going to start off on Friday. So first up, we've got
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
On the road, taking on
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
Friday at 5 p.m. on Big Fox. Number 24, Illinois. Yes, we live in a world with ranked Illinois. Travels to number 22, Nebraska. Yes, we live in a world with ranked Nebraska. It is a crazy time. Heady days here in the Big Ten. This is the Big Ten opener for both teams. They're each 3-0 and each have looked impressive in their own ways.
Yeah.
Nebraska is a 7.5-point home favorite. So both teams have pretty good and kind of surprisingly decent passing offenses. And I say surprising only because the Big Ten. And Nebraska's had a lot of issues over the years. But between Altmyer and Raiola, I think the quarterback play in this game is probably better than it's been in years. Definitely years, but how many years? Who knows?
Yeah.
So I think that could make this a little bit more high scoring than these games typically go. But at the same time, two very good defenses so far this season. I'm going to take Nebraska just because I think Nebraska is at very good, where I think Illinois is good.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be competitive. I just think I kind of like Nebraska like 31-21, something like that.
Yeah, I'm along the same lines here, too. I've been high on Nebraska a lot. Illinois is a little surprising. I mean, you know, look at the teams that Nebraska's played. But I feel like coming home, this is going to be they're going to look good. And I think they're going to, you know, win this game handily. Our colleague over at CBS, Tom Fornelli, does a good job with some of the interesting stats. And I was listening to him on the Cover 3 podcast about another team we'll talk about. But he listed out the Big Ten teams and the percentage of snaps where they were holding the lead in a game. And Nebraska is at number two, 88.52% of the snaps they've had a lead in the game. Illinois is up there, 71%. But I just feel like this is going to be Nebraska sort of flexing their muscles and showing the big, hey, this is, we're not only going to make a bowl game, but we're going to like make some noise in the Big Ten this year. So
yeah, I think they're already at second stage Matt Rhule. And second stage Matt Rhule at the college level is usually they're killers. They're starting to kill teams.
Yeah. So I agree with you on this one. I'm going to go with Nebraska in 7.5. I saw it at like 8.5 someplace else. So even 7.5, I feel pretty good about that. All right, let's get to only three 9 a.m. games this week. But the first one, we've got, well, I guess we'll do the one, but we have hosting
the Ohio State Buckeyes
against this is the Marshall Thundering Herd, correct?
Yes, they were
the Marshall Thundering Herd. What'd you think?
That's pretty good.
Was that a thundering herd?
There was. I felt that's what. If I close my eyes, that's what I picture.
All right. Marshall is coming to town. They are the latest sacrificial lamb at the altar of Ryan Day in Ohio State. 9 a.m. on Big Fox. Ohio State's number three team in the country. Marshall is very much not. Ohio State's a 40-point favorite. What's Marshall done this year? Let's look. They beat Stony Brook. They beat the shit out of that river, 45-3. And then they lost to Virginia Tech on the road, 31-14. You know, they've had enough of a pulse that I don't think they lose by 40. So give me Marshall.
All right. I don't think we've got to pick an Ohio State game because they've always
no,
been
we
no
have.
Line.
We have.
What was it? What did...
We picked Akron against them and won.
Oh, yeah. We took the 50 points.
Yeah,
whatever,
we took the 50. Won. And then the last week, we took Ohio State to murder whoever they played last week.
No, they were on a bye.
Well, 2 weeks ago, we took them to murder Western Michigan 56-0. You know what? I'm switching my pick. We're going Ohio State.
Yeah, I was going with Ohio State too.
I can't keep just hating on Chip Kelly. I got to get that hate out of my soul. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, I can still hate him. I just can't let it affect my picks.
I think this is just a really good team, and they're going to be hosting. They off a bye week. I think they just kind of curb stomp Marshall.
But they did only lose by 17 at Virginia Tech. Is Virginia Tech 23 points worse than Ohio State? Probably.
Yes, yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
You just talked yourself into that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right, here's a fun one. We got I don't know how they're not ranked yet.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey folks. I'm from Indiana.
Yeah, this is they're going against the Charlotte 49ers. Hey, I think I found some gold.
That was loud.
You didn't like that one?
No.
I think it was a good... I think I did a good sound,
yes,
though.
Yes, just the volume was not...
Was it too much?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Was it too much for you, the listener out there?
I think I can soften it for the podcast, but for the live listeners,
let me know. You know, when you're feeling it, when you're feeling the effect, it's hard to tamp that down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. So Indiana is, I think, quite good. Yes, some of that is influenced by them in front of my own eyes on Saturday.
Did they? Who did they play?
Beating the crap out of UCLA, 42-13.
Was it a road game or was it for UCLA? Is it no. a tough road environment?
No.
Wasn't. Oh, is it home?
It was. I mean, it was somewhat of a tough road environment because there was a lot of Hoosier fans.
Were they
there.
Were they tired? Did they have any rest before that game, or were they good?
They had a week off.
Oh, okay.
Charlotte's coming to town on the Big Ten Network at 9 a.m. Charlotte, let's just take a look at Charlotte real quick. Because Charlotte is, according to Bill Connolly's SP+, the 125th team in the country this year. They lost to James Madison 30-7. They lost at North Carolina 38-20. And they beat Gardner Webb by a point. Gardner Webb being an FCS or maybe even D2. Who knows?
I was going to put you down for Indiana.
Yeah, please. Indiana, they've been murdering teams this year, including P4 last week. I mean, yes, they are still P4. UCLA. They had the one game where they were, you know, struggling to get right against FIU, and they won by 24 and held them to 7. They've allowed 23 total points this year while scoring, let's do some quick math here, 150 points. Yeah, so they've outscored teams 150-23. That's a lot.
Yeah.
If you average that margin out, it still has them covering against Charlotte. So, yeah, give me Indiana.
Me too. And going back to Tom Fornelli's chart there, you know who's the number one team as far as like percentage of snaps holding the lead? And they've already played a conference game? Indiana. 92% of the time they've had a lead. I think he said on the podcast, it was over 80% of the time Indiana's had a two-score lead in games. So they just score. They keep the lead. They put up points. They look really good. If you're talking about a team that lost already, Charlotte, to James Madison, where Kirk Cignetti came from and took most of the players, yeah, I think they're going to just curb stomp Charlotte in this one. So 28.5 is a lot, but I don't think it's enough.
Okay.
The way they're beating teams, I really like. I like the way Indiana's playing. So I'm going to roll with the favorite here. I think we've gone all favorites, which is probably not good, but whatever. We'll do
whatever,
that.
Dude.
Next up, we've got
Maryland Terrapins.
Snap, 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 snap,
snap. They'll be hosting the Villanova Wildcats.
This is not basketball, correct?
Correct. 9 a.m. on the Big Ten Network, Villanova. Undefeated Villanova. Yes, oh. They're an FCS school, but undefeated. Traveling to Maryland.
There's a line for this one.
Yeah, to take on the Terrapins. Well, Villanova's quite good. They're a quite good FCS. Maryland is a 17.5-point favorite. So here's what Villanova's done this year. They beat Youngstown State at home by 7. They went at Colgate, 128-3, and they beat Towson. Towson? What are we going with there? This is your region.
I don't know.
Oh, God. Always with you. They beat them 14-13. That's a lot of close games. A lot of, I'm guessing they've got a good defense. That would be my assumption here. Maryland is flawed in some ways.
Sure.
They struggled to score until pretty late against Virginia. But I think I'm still going to take a minus 17.5 against an FCS at home.
Yeah, that's not a lot for an FCS, you know, FCS school, even a pretty good one. I think, you know, yeah, I'm going to take Maryland too. Like, I just don't know enough about.
I would need a reason to take Villanova, and I don't have one.
Yeah. Besides it being like a decent FCS school.
So. Yeah, and I don't know. We've seen some Dakotas fall to the mighty Big Ten. So,
but yeah, 17.5, it's like, but yeah. I mean, is it going to be like 40-0? No, but if it's 35-10, then you still win. Like, yeah. So I'll take Maryland here, just not knowing much about this one. More out-of-conference games than I was expecting this week, but what can you do? Okay. I guess because we have that extra bye. All right. This is another non-conference game. We've got
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
Another FCS game. UCLA traveling to the mighty LSU Tigers. That wasn't a tiger. I don't know what that was. At 12:30 on ABC, UCLA is 1-1, traveling to the number 16 LSU, 2-1. LSU is only a 24-point favorite. We were talking earlier in the week, and I was thinking this might move all the way to four touchdowns. It didn't. Let me give you the rundown of what UCLA is currently contending with. Jay Tawia sat out the last two practices of this week, Tuesday and Wednesday. Keanu Williams, his counterpart at defensive tackle. So the two starting defensive tackles hasn't been seen at practice after hurting himself against Indiana. Ale Kaho, a two deep linebacker, newly hurt on Wednesday, was not at practice or was not practicing. Titus Mokiau Atamalala, a starting receiver, he was out on Wednesday. And Kanye Clark, a two deep cornerback, suffered a pretty serious leg injury against Indiana, and he was not at practice this week. So a decent amount of injuries suddenly have popped up for UCLA, a decent amount of absences likely for Saturday against LSU. None of that probably matters because LSU against a fully healthy UCLA would probably kill them. Here's the thing with LSU. Their run game has not been good this year, but it might have gotten figured out last week. Durham, the running back against South Carolina, he ran the ball really well. They're probably going to lean on him.
Avery looks good, too. Well, he did. I don't know. Does he get hurt or is he still back? I don't know if he's back.
Avery. Is it the receiver?
No, Emory. Is it?
Emory tore his ACL in the first game.
Oh.
Or after the first game.
Yeah. Okay. So he's the one that looked good in that against USC.
Yeah. So they've been they've been scrambling to find another guy. Durham looks like the guy. He's a freshman.
Okay.
LSU has some explosive playmakers at receiver, and they've got a good quarterback. If the running game is truly figured out after South Carolina, then that is a devastating offense. Their offensive line has not been quite as good as people expected, but it's still two tackles who are probably going to be top two round picks and two returning starters in the interior. So their offense will be able to score against UCLA. The big question is UCLA's offense. Can it perform like at a replacement level? The problem is they haven't. They've performed terribly to this point in the year, and LSU has a pass rush. They don't have a great defense, but they do have a pass rush, and they do create a lot of havoc. So this is one where to pick UCLA, you have to like something. Like there has to be some part of UCLA that you're like, oh, no, that's going to turn around, and there's nothing. And I cover the team, and I don't see anything. I don't like they've got talented receivers, can't get them the ball. The offense still looks fundamentally flawed in like just basic ways. I like LSU here by a lot. Like I think they're going to win, I don't know, 16, 17, something like that.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you too. It makes me a little nervous. There's a lot of points because LSU, you know, they've struggled at times. You know, they haven't, but I think coming home, you know, they hated losing to USC and Vegas. Are they going to just like take it out on another LA team? Potentially. We're going back to that Tom Fornelli stat about percentage of snaps. A team has been leading.
Yeah, where's UCLA in that?
So they've already played Indiana, and they said they're number one. 92% of the time, Indiana's held the lead. UCLA, wait, let me see. It's let me scroll down. Oh, number 18. 1.73% of the snaps have held a lead this season.
Wait, how's that number 18?
Last.
Dead last. Oh, number 18 in the Big Ten.
In the Big Ten, sorry. Yeah. 18 in the Big Ten.
Got it.
The next closest is Purdue. They've held the lead 44.4% of the time.
Yeah, and like you would think, oh, that's a function of schedule. UCLA's had a very hard schedule. It's Hawaii and Indiana.
Yeah, like didn't lead against Hawaii most of the time.
Until the very end of the game when they kicked a field goal to go ahead.
Yeah.
Like it's dire times for UCLA.
So that's not good. I'm going to take LSU and the points too. But knowing that you know, LSU, we've seen them struggle at times. So we'll see. But I just don't think UCLA's that good. They got a chance, though. If USC got a lot of credit for beating LSU. Right. I think
no bullshit. The way UCLA like plays a competitive game here is they cannot start disaster ball. Like it can't be what it was against Hawaii and Indiana. They have to score on their first possession. If they don't score on their first possession, it's going to be bad. This team is not built to come back.
Yeah.
This offense is not built like really to score points, but definitely not to score points in bunches. They need to score first and try to control the game to a certain extent. But I like the odds of them doing that seem very slim.
We had a comment, Dog's Life in Portland. Does Foster lose his job Saturday on the tarmac or does he survive through the season?
He definitely survives through the season.
Yeah.
They're not going to.
He's two games in.
Yeah. UCLA's not going to do that.
But it's not going to go very well, I don't think.
Probably not.
We'll see. All right. We're agreeing on everything so far. God, another out-of-conference game. I thought there was mostly conference games. What's going on here? All right. We got
Penn State Nittany Lions.
This is the Kent State Golden Flashes coming to town. I think that's like a What do you think of that?
That's pretty good for a flash.
I don't know. 12:30 p.m. on the Big Ten Network. Kent State, 0-3, traveling to number 10, Penn State, 2-0. Penn State's a 49-point favorite. I'm just going to take Kent State.
Yeah.
That's too many points, even though they lost. Kent State lost 71-0 to Tennessee last week. They lost to St. Francis, which is an FCS by 6, and they lost at Pitt 55-24. But I could just see Penn State putting on the brakes when they're up 42-0, right? Like, I don't know. It just seems like too many points. You're counting on variance and weird things happening.
Yeah, I agree. I just got to take so many freaking points. We saw Penn State struggle with like Bowling Green. Now, do they just try to get right and run it up? I mean, Tennessee's really good. 71-0 is pretty, or whatever it was. Like, that's freaking terrible. But, yeah, just a lot of points. But, you know, watch it be like 55-0. So maybe it will be. Totally. But that's just, we saw, like, Ohio State sort of struggle to cover a 50-point spread. Like, I don't know. I got to see it from Penn State. They just, you know, that Bowling Green game, they were losing. You know, like, you could see that. It was close. And Bowling Green's way better, obviously, but 49 is a lot of points. A
lot of points.
Okay. We got another conference game. This is a pretty big one. We've got
USC Trojans
at
Michigan Wolverines.
Yeah, if you're a sane person who doesn't have like a vested rooting interest in UCLA and LSU, watch this instead. 12:30 p.m. on CBS. Number 11 USC traveling to number 18 Michigan. I don't really understand why Michigan is still currently ranked. USC's 2-0. Michigan's 2-1, but the one was a blowout loss to Texas, and they haven't looked dominant or very good in any of their games. USC is a 5.5-point road favorite. The way I'm thinking about this game is I have watched Danton Lynn now for a little over a season of football. When he is faced with a one-dimensional offense, which is what Michigan is, he tends to strangle them. And I think Michigan is in danger of being strangled in this game. I think Danton Lynn's going to be able to shut down Michigan's running game, and then it's going to be largely dependent on, does Alex Orji actually have an arm? Did they misevaluate him when they were deciding that Davis Warren should be the quarterback? Can he make throws into coverage? I mean, can he do stuff under pressure? We'll find out because I think they're going to largely take away Michigan's run game. And on the other side, Michigan's got a good defense. It's a Lincoln Riley offense. I think they're going to score enough points. So I like USC a lot in this one. I think USC's potentially going to win this by a couple of touchdowns.
Yeah, I agree with you here. Just doing all my previews and reading about Michigan and seeing what I've been able to see. It just seems like right now USC is a team that has like their I's are dotted, the T's are crossed. They're just doing the right things. Like, they're not relying.
Do I sound like I'm in mourning when I talk about Danton Lynn?
A little bit. Okay. Yeah, a little. Cool. A little, yeah.
That's what I'm going for.
They just don't have, like you said, it's a one-dimensional Michigan team. Alex Orji's come into games. We've just not seen him throw the ball. And I think he's thrown 7 passes. And now he's the starting quarterback. And Davis Warren, who you had in there, was an interception machine, you know? And you're going to be a one-dimensional team. I think I talked about this, David, off the air. LSU came in trying to run the ball against USC and did not have a lot of success. But they had Garrett Nussmeier, who could complete passes downfield. And they moved in chunks. When they moved the ball, it was mostly through the air. And I don't see Michigan being able to do that. You know, I think Daniel Lynn does a good job against mobile quarterbacks. USC's been susceptible to that. And they don't. There's not one thing you can take away for USC on offense. I thought Michigan's pass rush could, you know, give USC problems, but they haven't really put a lot of pressure on opposing quarterbacks this year. It's not been as good. They have some NFL bodies, NFL dudes on this Michigan defense. I think 3 potential first rounders, but they haven't generated a lot of pressure. Miller Moss spreads it around to everybody. So there's not like one thing you could take away from USC, and their special teams have been better. And I think this is a year one Sharon Moore thing. It's just, they're not quite buttoned down like we saw them under Jim Harbaugh. So it's a big house. It's the first road game. I mean, first conference game ever, and you got to play the defending national champion. Like, things could go sideways for sure, but I just think if things play out the way you think, it's USC's going to win this one by a touchdown or so.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it's 31-10.
Yeah, I was going to just take the points, but Dave kind of convinced me otherwise going in there. So, all right, whatever. Okay, another out-of-conference game. Man, I really thought there was more conference games this week. We've got
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
What is a hokey? Help me out here.
Is it like turkey thing?
One time
chicken?
I knew what a hokey was.
It was like, isn't it like a turkey?
Here, let's make sure. Hokey bird. Yeah, it's a turkey. Good job. Okay.
Aren't you supposed to be smart?
Rutgers taking on Virginia Tech Hokies.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. I like it.
You like that? 12:30 p.m. on the ACC network. Rutgers 2-0 traveling to Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech is a 3.5-point favorite. Here's what Virginia Tech has done this year. They lost at Vanderbilt in, I believe that was week 0. As we talked about earlier, they beat Marshall by 17. And then they went at Old Dominion, won by 20. They've played essentially one Power 4 conference team.
And lost.
Historically one of the worst ones. They lost by 7. And then they've played, how good is Old Dominion this year? Let's see.
Is that the shipping company?
Old Dominion is 0-3, lost at South Carolina versus East Carolina and Virginia Tech. Yeah, I'm going to take Rutgers. I like their defense, and I like their running back a lot. I watched a little bit of Virginia Tech against Vanderbilt. I don't love this team. I'll take Rutgers. I don't think Virginia Tech's done enough to be favored by 3.5. I mean, I don't know if Rutgers will win, but I could see them losing by a field goal.
Yeah, I could see this being like a pick 'em, and just, you know, you're getting Virginia Tech's getting some points because, or giving some points because it's a home game, Enter Sandman and all that fun stuff over there. But no, I'm gonna take Rutgers to cover this one. I think it'll probably be close. If it's a field goal game, you're gonna win this one. So yeah, I mean, maybe Rutgers goes in and turns the ball over a bunch of times and it just sort of steamrolls. But, you know, I don't think Vanderbilt's that good and Virginia Tech could get it done there. I think Rutgers is a better team than that. It's on the road, but I'll take the points here and feel pretty good about it.
All right.
Okay, we got another conference game coming up. We got, and this is a purple battle, by the way.
Yes.
Northwestern Wildcats.
At
Washington Huskies.
All right, this is a 4 p.m. This is a really interesting one for me. It's on FS1. Northwestern is 2-1. Their lone loss in overtime versus Duke at home. Otherwise, they struggled to score against Miami, Ohio, but beat them and then beat Eastern Illinois after maybe figuring out quarterback at the end of that game. Washington lost last week to Washington State. Jed Fish had a piano fall on his head during that game, so we'll wait and see if he is available for this one. Washington is a 10.5 point home favorite in this game. I really don't know here. You know, I think Northwestern has a pretty good defense, and they may have figured out an offense to an extent. Washington has struggled a little bit at times offensively. Took them a while against Eastern Michigan. Took them a little bit of time against Weber State, and then only scored 19 against Washington State last week. I'm just going to take Northwestern here.
Yeah.
I don't think they win, but they play close games. Washington has had some offensive issues. Feels like an easy take the points.
I think this is a take the points situation too. It's scaring me that we're agreeing on all this stuff. But with Washington, yeah, could they figure it out, bounce back after the, you know, bad loss to the Pac-12 team last week at Washington State? But I agree. I think Northwestern is one of those teams where it's going to probably be close. And if you're expecting Washington to just come out and blow them out, we just haven't seen that from this team that yet this year. It feels like it's going to be a touchdown kind of game. And if you're getting 10.5, like, yeah, I this just isn't the Washington from before. They don't look very good. It's going to be some growing pains to for Jed Fish to get this going unless he leaves for the Florida job. But, yeah, I'm going to take the points here and feel pretty good about this one too.
All right.
This one, is this the Floyd of Rosedale one, I believe?
Yeah,
I
think. This is the Old Oaken Floyd of Rosedale.
Okay, we've got
Iowa Hawkeyes
against
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Those are two good ones. Those are two good ones. The Iowa one gets you sort of fired up for the whole, like, I don't know why, but there's just more energy.
Golden Gophers is the funniest thing I think I've ever heard. 4:30 p.m. on NBC. Iowa traveling to Minnesota. Iowa is 2-1. Their lone loss, a 1-point loss to Iowa State. Minnesota is also 2-1. Their lone loss in the opener against UNC. Otherwise, they have not allowed a point in recent weeks. What does that tell you about this game? Well, Iowa is favored by 2.5 points. That is 2.5 that more than Iowa may score in this game. I'm taking Minnesota, not even thinking twice about it. I don't really understand why Iowa is a road favorite here.
I think I'm 0-for picking Iowa games. Mm-hmm. But this is like home team getting points. There was a 2.5 point spread, I think, or 1.5 point spread for the damn Iowa State game where Iowa had the lead and just sort of blew it. I can't get that out of my mind, watching Iowa not doing anything or like looking like they were trying to offense, but then they couldn't really do it. And I think Minnesota's got a good defense. I don't see Iowa pushing it a lot in this one. I'll just take the home team, getting a couple points. Home dog, I like it in this one. And I'll probably be wrong because I'm always wrong about Iowa football, but I do love the drop. I'm going to play it again.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
It's just with the music and then her energy with mm-hmm. the hawk. Like, it's just a really good, yeah. It's a great drop.
No, I think this one could be like a 7-6 game.
Yeah.
Like, it could be not a whole lot of
like,
offense.
Usually like 2.5 points, you're basically like a pick. I'm like, no, that's like a touchdown in an Iowa game. <So. laughs> All right, last couple games. Now we got
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
Taking on the Boston College Eagles. That's a crow, not an eagle, but don't worry about it. All right, so here's the thing about Boston College. They beat Florida State's ass in week one, or week zero, that was. It was week one. It was true week one, because in week zero they lost to Georgia Tech. Then they beat Duquesne 56-0, and then they went at Missouri. And if you didn't watch this one, they gave Missouri all they could handle. Lost 27-21. I think Boston College is pretty good.
I think so too.
Michigan State, they went at Maryland. Looks like a flawed Maryland team, 1-3. I mean, they haven't been bad. They've been a lot better than I think people expected. Michigan State wise, but here's what it is. This is 5 p.m. ACC Network, Michigan State traveling to BC. BC is a 6.5 point favorite. I think they're 6.5 points better than Michigan State, and especially at home. Their run game has been I mean, it was really good against Florida State, and they were able to just kind of control the game, control the clock, and dictate to the other team. I think Michigan State, in an ideal world, will look like that, and at times this year they may look like that, but I think Boston College is just a little bit ahead of where Jonathan Smith and Michigan State are right now, so I'm going to take BC.
I'm going to agree with you. You don't go in an alumni stadium expect to get a win. Come on, man. I've been to a game there. Like, there's it's kind of cool. It's cute. 44,000 people or so. So mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, anything crazy. But I do – Michigan State's look better than I thought. But watching Childs play quarterback had me concerned. They won that Maryland game, but it was like – he would taketh and giveth away, and just it was. I think there's just too much of a roller coaster factor with Michigan State on offense, and I think Boston College is a more buttoned down team. I like them to win by a touchdown at home, so I will take BC in this one as well. My mom's a proud grad, so I will. I'll take BC.
Somebody mentioned this in the chat, but how terrible of a coach is Jeff Hafley? Just ditches BC right before they're going to be good. And you know what?
Yeah.
They probably wouldn't have been good if he'd been there because he's not a good coach.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Bill O'Brien's come in there and I think has done a really nice job. Helped you out,
mm-hmm.
right? Getting leaving an opening for Chip Kelly, who I think you have a love-hate relationship. Or
yeah, definitely love in there, too.
Yeah. All right, we're both on BC. When we pick the same stuff, it's usually not good.
No.
Okay, next, last one we've got.
Oh, Purdue Boilermakers.
And they're on the road taking on
Oregon State Beavers.
Yes.
Love it.
Get to use that drop.
5:30 p.m. on the CW, Purdue 1-1.
CW, baby.
1-1 traveling to Oregon State, 2-1. Oregon State's a 4.5-point favorite. Purdue, obviously, they just got murdered by Notre Dame at home, 66-7. Oregon State, meanwhile, got murdered at home by Oregon. Not quite as murdered, but pretty murdered, 49-14. It really depends on what you think about Purdue's ability to bounce back from that. They showed some ability to score in the opener. It was an FCS game, but Hudson Card looked pretty good. Can Hudson Card look like that against Oregon State? I have my doubts. I think I'm just going to take Oregon State here, -4.5. I'm not sure Purdue's equipped to go on the road right after just getting shellacked and play a good, competent football game.
I went to go to the dock and like write Oregon State. I'd already wrote it for you, so I guess you assume the same thing. both these teams disappointed me last week because I thought Purdue getting a bunch of points against Notre Dame, they'd take care of business. Just no, like not even close. Same thing with Oregon State. Like I thought they'd be spunky against an Oregon team that really hadn't looked that good the first couple weeks. And Oregon, that was Oregon's get right game. And there was good news for the Pac-12 last week, and Oregon State didn't come up and play that way at home. But Purdue, I think, is pretty down bad. They are 17th on Tom Fornelli's list of teams playing with the lead. You know, I think a lot of that's the Notre Dame game where they just got absolutely crushed. But I would go. I think we're going to take Oregon State here. It is a tough place to play. I think if you're like a competent team going into Research Stadium, obviously Oregon is, like, you can overcome some of that. I don't know if Purdue's going to be able to. It's going to be loud. I don't think Purdue's that good. Oregon State, unfortunately, doesn't look that good either, but I think they're going to win this one by a touchdown or so. So give me the Beavs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's what we got. Well, you know what we're going to do?
What are we going to do now?
We're going to take a quick break.
Okay. How quick?
If you're listening on the podcast, it's a couple minutes. If you are on YouTube, it is instantaneous. So
not really. It's like 10 seconds.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. Back in a minute. All right. We're back here on the podcast of champions. We got a comment from Mark after Purdue versus Oregon State. Stay tuned for some One Tree Hill reruns. I got to watch a little bit of CW. And Tony's like, the CW, I get that channel. I literally was talking to, my accountant is a USC grad, used to go to games a lot. He's a fan, but he doesn't. And he was like, USC was on the Big Ten Network. And I didn't know if we got it. And I looked on my, whatever he has. Like, I get the Big Ten Network. It's like, it is a different experience for a lot of these West Coast schools to just be able to get the conference network without jumping through hoops or changing your provider. I guess some of them got blacked out, but for the most part, it's available. You've been able to watch the Big Ten Network for a really long time, and if you need it now, and the CW, that's one of the advantages. If you want to watch Oregon State, you want to watch Washington State when they're on the CW, like everybody gets it. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
We got a voicemail.
Okay.
You want me to play it?
Yeah, please.
All right.
Hi, this is a longtime Bruin supporter, Terry Donahue. Those glory years, winning Rose Bowls and being a very good program.
I thought it was Terry Donahue.
And right now, the program is in such shambles that I put 40% of the blame on Chip Kelly for not recruiting the last 5 years. And then, of course, 60% on Martin Jarman for allowing Chip Kelly to string us along and then have the ability to hire either Jonathan Smith or Jed Fish and do neither. And then decide to hire Deshaun Foster, who's a great Bruin, but has zero head coaching experience. So after we go 3-9 or 4-8, if Martin Jarman wants to keep his job, the first thing he should do is call Barry Odom at UNLV and get him, keep a couple of the assistants. And if for somehow Barry Odom doesn't take the job, then call Justin Wilcox, stick it to Cal, and then at least go see Belichick, Pete Carroll, and Mike Vrabel. That's the only way Martin Jarman should save his job, and we will be lucky to win 3 games. And I'm telling you guys this because it's the truth will set you free, just the facts, because you realize that the media will try to support Deshaun Foster. He's in over his head. He has no business being the head coach. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, hard to argue with that. I will say, obviously an optimist when he said they're going to go 3-9 or 4-8 this year. Right?
Yeah, that's pretty optimistic.
That's very optimistic at this point.
Did someone predict them to go like 6-6?
I can't remember. Who can say? That person's probably crazy. I think your feeling is echoed by a lot of the fan base right now. I think, it's what I was saying, I believe, in our show on Monday. I don't know. I've been talking a lot to a lot of different shows, so who knows? There was not that catharsis moment for UCLA fans in November where the hated man was fired. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
And so it entered this kind of weird in between space where there was a firing and a departure and a hiring, but never that moment where there was any kind of acknowledgement that what we just witnessed was a failure. Chip Kelly, and I think that is still present because that's how you hire continuity, is you don't think it was a failure and you're out of step with your entire fan base if you believe that. Going 8-4, 9-3, and 7-5. 8-5, I guess, with the bowl win against 3 of the worst schedules in UCLA history, while you are tanking NIL and recruiting and not competing for anything real, that's not sufficient as your culmination years. And that was apparent to everyone in the fan base, but not apparent to UCLA's administration. And I think that's frustrating for a lot of people. And I think that frustration now is playing out. This season could have gone this badly with a coach who came in after a firing, and I don't think you would be seeing the level of frustration that you're seeing from UCLA fans right now because of just I think they feel like, it's what we were talking about back in November and December when we were talking about all this stuff where it's like, you can't feel like you care more than the administration.
Yes.
You can't feel like you give more of a crap than the people whose job it is to give a crap. And that's the part I think that's frustrating for UCLA fans.
I agree. I want to get your thought. Big Bob had a comment. I don't deny Jonathan Smith is a better coach than Foster, but I have doubts he would be able to recruit at a high level. But think about not even just the recruiting side, but what if UCLA did get to hire Jonathan Smith or Jed Fish? And do you think they could be in a similar position but with better prospects for the future? Like, what are your thoughts on that? And I guess the recruiting aspect Bob brings up.
Well, Jonathan Smith, look what we're seeing with Michigan State this year, because Michigan State was a dumpster fire last year. UCLA, this is the part where I think people are trying to grasp at straws for explanations for what's going on. UCLA is not an untalented team. They're 29th in the 247 talent composite. There's a reason for that. They've got some talented players, more than I think Michigan State had, more than Indiana had, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What they don't have is an experienced head coach bringing in proven schemes who knows, you know, the ins and outs and ups and downs of being a head coach. And that's just the reality of hiring a first-year guy, and especially a first-year guy who doesn't have coordinator experience. He doesn't have these things, and he has to learn on the job. Jonathan Smith and Jed Fish obviously bring a lot of that. They bring that experience. Jonathan Smith has crafted – I mean, if you saw what he did in that 2-10 year at Oregon State in terms of, like, the run schemes, it's like you can see – even while they're losing a lot of games, oh, there's something here. Like, he's got the bones of something. Jed Fish, even when they were going 1-11, was recruiting like a demon. He had the 25th ranked recruiting class at Arizona when he went 1-11. Do you know how crazy that is? Deshaun Foster right now, I think UCLA, last I checked, was the 37th ranked class. And this is UCLA. It's not Arizona. So it's not recruiting at the level of, you know, what Jed Fish did off of a 1-11 season, and we don't know yet if this one's going to end up that bad. It might not. I don't want to get into the thing where, like, anybody would be struggling like this, because that's not true. It's not even true that anyone you would have hired in February would necessarily be struggling like this. This is again looking like it might be one of the worst UCLA teams ever, and the talent isn't dictating that. A lot of these guys who are performing poorly right now performed quite well last year. Ethan Garbers, after the first game of the year, was pretty good. TJ Harden was pretty good. He was averaging over 5 yards a carry last year. He's not doing that this year. There are a lot of pieces of this team that are currently not looking very good looked a lot better last season. And I think you just have to – you got to swallow that pill. And you got to realize that, yes, a critical mistake was made in not firing Chip Kelly in November. And
yes,
the ramifications of that are still being felt. And there have been other mistakes made along the way, but that was the critical one.
No, I agree. I mean, USC was doing stuff like this for years where you're making these bad decisions and you're kind of looking back. And the analogy I would always use is, like, sometimes there could be one really bad decision, but a lot of it's a bunch of small ones. Like, if you don't pay one parking ticket and just walk away, like, nothing happens to you. You don't pay 10 of them and there's a boot on your car. And it just sort of, like, it takes some time. But, like, at the time, you were saying, fire Chip Kelly now. Like, the best time to do it was yesterday, but the second best time is right now. And the next best time would be tomorrow. And you don't do that. And then all of a sudden, then he's leaving, and it's this weird thing. And then you get, yeah, like, that bad decision is now why UCLA is kind of in the position that they're in.
Yeah, and I kind of go back and forth on whether the decision was cynical or not, or whether it was based off of the decision to retain was based off of cynical stuff like money. We don't want to do it because of money. Or whether it was partially based on, no, we truly think he was a success. We truly think this is success for UCLA. And in that case, it's just it's plainly ignorance. Not like, look, UCLA's place in the world has certainly fallen in the last 25 years. Let's not, you know, get too rosy about it, but it's plain ignorance about the fan base, plain ignorance about, you know, most of, like, I would say UCLA's hardcore fans come from the 90s, come from when UCLA was the number one team in the first BCS poll. They come from the Cade McNown years. And then there's a lot who still go back to the 80s, come from the Terry Donahue best teams, you know, the 88 team, the 82 team. they don't think that this is acceptable. They don't think that being, oh, maybe a bowl team some years and then in rebuilding years 4-8, they don't think that's acceptable. I think they're probably right to not think that's acceptable. I think it's been a lot of terrible mismanagement of the program that has led to it, you know, not being at minimum consistent bowl team. And then in your every third or fourth year, compete, you know, compete hard. That's what UCLA always was historically. And I think it's not out of the realm of the imagination that it could be again with the right management. But it's just been horribly mismanaged. And I think UCLA had an AD come in Martin Jarmond, who didn't have any connection to when UCLA was good, keeps his own counsel and looks at it and says, well, they've been bad for 20 years. So it's, you know, it's a program that's, you know, mediocre and should be happy when they go 8-4. And that's just not. That's not what this fan base has ever been. And so I think you're seeing a discordance between what, you know, Joe Fan not just expects, but like wants to see, like a competitive program that's actually being talked about nationally in a way that's not embarrassing versus, I think, what the administration considers the football program to be.
Who's our friend, the Washington Fan, that does the charts and everything? Is that David or
Andrew?
Andrew, yeah. Andrew, I need you to do a chart of like, come up with some metric for UCLA athletic success. And I want it to be, there's a guy that I know that was working for the Daily Bruin sometime in the 2000s. So go UCLA athletic success before he started writing for the Daily Bruin and then after.
You know, I started concurrent with Carl Durrell.
Did you?
Yeah, no, I am the harbinger of doom. And you might, like, honest to God, I didn't start really following UCLA until probably 2000 or 2001. I mean, if only I had started, I really want to watch this game on December 5th, 1998. I think if I watch that game, I'm really going to be a fan. And that, of course, was them losing to Miami 49-45.
Oh, yeah. Crazy. Edgerrin James.
That was the big turning point for UCLA Athletics.
Yeah. So it's you.
It's
so
me.
Andrew can do
it's
that.
It's my fault.
I think we have an email here. It's a fun fact. Gentlemen, one thing I'm surprised that no one has brought up is the Zodiac Killer. I think that the caller might actually be the Zodiac Killer, and I'm worried for your safety. There was the notorious one in California, but there was also one in New York. After hearing the voicemail from the Zodiac Killer and him being a Rutgers and Stanford alum, I think he may actually be the Zodiac Killer. Although the New York one was caught, do we really know if it wasn't the Stanford guy? That wasn't the Stanford guy? Also, this email is hard to find. This email was hard to find. It may be easier for any all to add it to your Twitter or YouTube info. Your pal, Dave Wipes. Back to front.
That's not true.
Interesting. It's hard to find. We mentioned
Side to side.
We mentioned it on the show.
Imagine doing that. Just imagine it for a second. Yeah. Take a second. Picture it. Wiping side to side. Mm.
Okay.
Do you like that? You would just be smearing all over your butt.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
I want to get a bidet.
A bidet in Hawaii when I went last November at the Marriott. In Waikiki. It was a magical experience.
It's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. I would definitely.
Especially if you've got like kind of a hairy butt. It definitely helps.
Yeah.
It definitely helps.
The foreign countries got that right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we need to do that. So I'm actually looking into one.
The movie Demolition Man got this right too. They had something called The Three Shells. Did you ever watch this movie?
I don't, maybe, but it's
tremendous movie.
Okay.
But they had something called The Three Shells. Nobody explains what it means, but then they're like, you wipe your butt with paper? Because that's ridiculous. Why do we do that? Bidets exist. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Especially the environmental concerns and stuff, like, you know, trees and.
Yeah. Just power nozzle that thing. That's all. All I want. Yeah. I don't want to wipe. No. Get out of here.
I can't wait to. Yeah, getting one.
Absolutely.
That's good. But no, thanks for the email there. I don't think we're concerned for our safety, but you never know. You know, he's a crafty guy, but we love his voicemails either way. If he kills us, I think it's probably worth it for the voicemails.
People aren't liking our discussion of bidets. They're not loving it.
Oh.
I know. Haters. All right. What else we got? You ready for West Texas Mike's question?
Yeah, go ahead.
You got to tell the whole damn world that this is bear territory. Isn't the Calgarithm proof that the Pac-12 teams needed this to taste a little blood in their mouths, to go out into the world and get into a street fight for their lives? I think it's become clear that the incestuousness killed the conference. The SEC, of course, thrives on incestuousness and its cult-like propaganda. But these West Coast teams, on the other hand, needed to go out and show the world, okay, just the East Coast, that yes, football out West does exist, and it is glorious. Yeah, Cal is heading to Florida State this weekend.
California Golden Bears.
The Antifa mob going to Florida State. That's going to be fun. They're probably going to beat them.
I think they will. Florida State's 0-3.
Florida State lost to Memphis last week at home, 20-12.
You know, after the game, when players come out of the locker room and there's usually like a table with like food on it, like Chick-fil-A or something. I'm wondering if like Cal's post game meal has like sponsored by UCLA, like this is paid for with Calimony or anything. Is there any specific aspect of the Cal athletic program that this money came directly from UCLA? So maybe I would be cool if it was like the post game meal.
I think the only way UCLA gets to 2 or 3 wins is if they somehow get 10% of Cal's wins.
Oh, they could reverse Calimony.
Yeah,
I could see something like that. Have you seen Cal Twitter? Like they're
it's been incredible.
The woke
what is it? Woke Campbell Stadium.
They're woke, and they were like they had like the sheriff bear or something that was like, all of you have to put your guns in these rainbow bins. It was like some hilarious.
It's tweets. So amazing.
The point like Florida State fans were like laughing like this is great. You know like. You know, they already went into Auburn and took all their guns and everything. And
yeah, a lot of decolonization. They decolonized Auburn and now they're heading to Florida State.
It's pretty
decolonized fun. Tallahassee.
It's pretty fun. Like it was, like they were appreciated. So I think it's good for you got to make some noise. Mark, 4-0 Berkeley. Did the Big Ten pick the wrong UC? Yeah,
maybe.
Potentially. Yeah, let's see. Big Bob, UCLA for Cal is the my bookie for POC. Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, I think it's. I think they definitely Cal Twitter could do that. Like sponsored by UCLA. This is the money that UCLA pays us, and this is what our Twitter. This is our social media team paid for by UCLA funds. Thanks, Big Ten. Something like that. I think that's great. We have a few comments in the chat or questions in the chat we'll get to, and then we'll wrap things up here. KH says, does UCLA give Foster a chance to figure it out, or is this a one-and-done season? And then, I mean, Alex had a similar thing. I'll put his up there, too, and let you comment on all this because you're the expert.
Sure.
Without scandal, is Foster getting a year two regardless of results? Would 1-11 with 11 straight losses and making history not be enough to do the unthinkable for UCLA and fire a coach 1 year in?
So here's the thing. I don't think there's any – I mean, we're talking about something that's literally unprecedented. So I think you got to throw out all of your historical ideas about UCLA and how it behaves and all this other stuff because, yeah, in a normal timeline, Deshaun Foster is absolutely getting a second year. Probably absolutely getting a third year. UCLA doesn't typically fire coaches very quickly. But I can't predict what the fallout of going 1-11 or even 2-10 would be. That's where it's just you don't know. UCLA's put itself in a lot of kind of unprecedented, very strange situations since November of last year. And when you're kind of through the looking glass is the way I've been describing it, you don't know. You don't know how things are going to go. Maybe your head coach leaves for an offensive coordinator position and you promote a running backs coach who had never even been a coordinator before. Weird things happen when you allow weird situations to fester. Yes, it looks likely right now, 2 games into the season, that UCLA is going to have a very bad year. Things can change. And But if they do have that very bad year, there's lots of things that come with a very bad year. You know, a locker room is only as good or as bad as its record. If the team is bad, like bad, 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 you could see locker room issues. You could see coaching staff issues. You can see all these different things come up that don't come up on winning teams, usually. Georgia, what are you doing, man? But you could see stuff happening. And so it's just hard to anticipate any of that stuff. And also, even if there is none of that, what 1-11 does to the fan base, what 1-11 does to the big boosters, what 1-11 does to the, you know, the heat on Martin Jarmond. Yeah. And I think that's where it's just not predictable right now. I think anybody saying anything is certain right now is out of their minds. Because 1-11 is a different deal. That would be the worst UCLA record by like a couple of losses ever. It would be unprecedented territory. So we'll see. Something we'll be tracking as the season goes along. I think these next three games, we've been talking about them for a while, LSU, Oregon, and Penn State. And the way I was talking about a preseason was they need to survive that stretch to have motivation to make a bowl game. Well, now it's they need to survive that stretch without quitting, like on the season, on each other, on the coaching staff. That's the only way this gets salvaged to a maybe 3-9 season, is if they somehow emerge from this three-game stretch with their heads still attached and still feeling like, you know, this coaching staff can get them where they need to be. I think this is now survival mode for this team, this coaching staff, the whole thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's an unprecedented situation. I don't think anybody can make any predictions at this point, aside from whatever you might think about the won and lost record.
Yeah, and I think right now it's a really precarious time for athletic departments. And because next year, if this house settlement thing goes through, you have to pay $22 million to student athletes out of your budget. That you have no new revenue coming in, nothing's changed, but you're going to be paying out more. And I think what you're seeing at Florida, they're getting rid of them, you know. And I think maybe you could try to keep things going for a little bit longer, but if boosters turn off and they're not going to like fund your NIL and all that kind of stuff, you're cooked. So I don't think you have a choice. And I think his buyout down there is like $60 million or something, but we already saw it. You know, Jimbo got $75 million, yep. Like, get out. So I know UCLA hasn't done that traditionally, but historically, there might be more pressure on the athletic department.
The closest thing they came to a preemptive firing was Jim Mora in 2017, when they fired him explicitly to hire Chip Kelly, and they paid a pretty big buyout to do it. But that was the last time. That was a different world for UCLA from a budgetary standpoint. That was building off of the Jim Mora era. They were able to fire him with basically energized funds from that era. They haven't. Season ticket sales have dropped precipitously basically every season. COVID hit UCLA and USC, but hit UCLA pretty hard because of the closures. And they have, as we've talked about at length on this show, they mismanage their budget. They don't fund athletics. They treat athletics like it needs to be a profit driven endeavor of its own and balance its own books. And that attitude makes it much, much harder for UCLA to be competitive if they aren't building, you know, great donor relations and are able to fully fund certain things with donor money. TV money changes that to an extent, but as you just pointed out, $22 million is going to the players from that new pool of money,
yeah,
bringing you right back to essentially square one, which is what you were making off of this old TV deal that now has to still be stretched to pay for everything that you're currently doing. Meanwhile, they're going to put together a pretty bad year that probably won't boost season ticket sales. It'll probably continue to a reduction. And, you know, donors might start pulling money. So it's there's just, again, no way of saying right now what's going to happen at the end of this season.
no way. And I, like, what's going to happen, like, not just in terms of Deshaun Foster's status, but like this entire AD, like, what you can't have bad football and survive in major college athletics if your athletic department is geared around football.
Yeah.
You know, UConn can, because their athletic department is geared around basketball. UCLA's is not. UCLA funds things based off of football. So if it's bad, and really bad, catastrophically bad, I don't know how it will be a tenable situation.
Yeah.
We'll see.
The more I think about it, I think Calamone should go directly to like that $22 million for players. So like when they hand the players the money, they could put it in an envelope that has UCLA on it or something. That'd be great. These are from your friends over at UCLA. Thanks. You know, I could see that happening. We got two things to get to. We'll get out of here. John Walker had a question. For the old POC, what do you think of the possibility of having five? Oregon, USC, Utah, GASP, Cal, Washington State, legacy Pac-12 members in the new college football playoff. I mean, Cal, if they keep winning, I mean, but I think Miami is probably the favorite. I don't know if Cal's better than like Clemson and Miami and stuff. Washington State would have to run the table.
How crazy would this have to be to get here? All right, so Oregon, they got right against Oregon State. I think they could still have
Oregon and USC could potentially.
They both have a pretty good case for the playoff. USC obviously has to win this weekend. Utah, Cam Rising needs to come back.
Yeah,
but they could.
Yeah, they could win the big.
Those three are too super realistic. Washington State is an interesting one because their schedule the rest of the way, I think it's all Mountain West at this point. Let me look. So Washington State going forward, they've got San Jose State. They got to go at Boise State. That's a big one.
Yep.
At Fresno State, Hawaii at home, San Diego State on the road, Utah State, Oregon State, New Mexico, and Wyoming. But they beat Washington and they beat the hell out of Texas Tech.
Yeah,
so they've taken on two P4s and beaten them both. Washington State's going to have a case to be the G5.
Right, but I kind of think they need to go undefeated.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a conference championship
totally.
Game and all that stuff.
Yeah, they need to go undefeated, but if they do, I think they'll have a case.
Yeah, no, I think they're in if they do. Like, if they go undefeated, they're in. But
and then
I don't know if they can do it otherwise.
Yeah, and then Cal's the weird one, obviously, but that's going to come down to, I think they host Miami this year?
I think so, yeah. They're at Florida State.
Well, if they beat Florida State, they're going to host Miami. Their remaining road swings are at SMU, at Wake Forest, and at Pitt.
Yeah.
Those are all winnable games for them. Miami at home, that's a huge one if they can get past Florida State this weekend.
Yeah, and I think because you have wins over
Auburn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you got this good out of conference win. I think same thing with Washington State. They got
this
a couple.
This could be fun.
That would be a lot of fun. We have a. Oops, where's the thing at?
Oops, where's my thing at? Oops, where's my thing at?
Oh, wait.
Ryan can't find his thing. He's looking down and he can't find his thing.
I was like, I'm on this right page, but it didn't seem to be correct. But anyway, all right, we've got a super chat. From Cliff. I'm actually about an hour behind on today's live stream, so I have no idea what you're talking about, but love the show. Keep it mediocre.
Thank you, Cliff.
Thanks, Cliff.
Don't have any idea what we're talking about either.
In about an hour, you will be thanked.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're hearing it now, but for everyone else, in about an hour, Cliff will hear his thank you. Unless he likes
it. Is that what he's saying, or is he saying he just chimed in an hour in? And is listening.
He's an hour behind on the stream, so he doesn't know what we're talking about.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, he's
got
tuned
it,
in.
Got it.
Yeah.
I understand now.
Do you get it?
I might. Someday, this will all become clear for me.
Sweet. All right. Well, I guess we can wrap it up. That was good stuff. That was a fun show.
This was fun.
We agreed on everything, so.
That's not good.
No.
Should we switch one up? Is there one you felt like
you, want me to?
You could switch up?
Let's see. Or any you want? You did switch one because we did disagree, and then you changed.
Yeah, they've been murdering teams, and I'm just letting my Chip Kelly bias affect me.
Okay. I mean,
is there anyone you didn't feel great about? I feel kind of good about all these this week, which is making me feel really nervous.
I mean, maybe like the Illinois one, but No, I like.
You realize we're going to go like 3-10.
I could do Penn State. Like, you want me to take Penn
State? Yeah, take Penn State.
I'll take Penn State.
Yeah, let's make that one the one we're disagreeing on, because it'll be fun to like.
So the only difference we're going to have is a 49-point spread, which is a coin flip in itself. Like, you could be up 50 and like give up a point.
Well, you could do what Michigan State did to their FCS, where they were like, oh, okay, we're up by like 35. Let's just not play anymore.
Yeah. All right. I'll take Penn State. Yeah. So we have something different.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, that'll wrap it up. I'm going to be pissed if I lose that. Like, lose that one. Like, I just switched it for the show. I'm like, damn it. Okay. All right. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. And we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye and happy birthday, Ernesto.
Happy birthday, Ernesto.